From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
This week on the program, we'll check in with Superintendent of Warren Woods Public Schools, Stacy Denowith-Fiche. We'll also chat with the first graduate of Michigan's Grow Your Own program, Mackenzie Calloway, and we'll round out the program with a conversation with the Reverend Jim Holley, a committed pastor for 50 years in the city of Detroit. Stay right there. We have a whole lot more coming up on School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Stacy Denowith-Fiche, the superintendent of Warren Woods Public Schools up in Macomb County. Welcome to the program, Stacy.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you stopping in and chatting with us. I wanted to talk to a superintendent currently and hear from someone who is dealing with what we would, I guess, basically say is some of the instability or changes happening at the federal level as it relates to the Department of Education. And for our School Talks listeners, if you're paying attention, there's been a lot of change and uncertainty at the federal level in terms of the department as a whole. Are parts of it moving to other parts of the government? Will funding continue? I mean, just a whole basket of issues that I would think for an end user like a school superintendent has created a fair amount of uncertainty. And I'd like to start with this. In light of that, how has all of this shift in policy, in your eyes, affected Michigan's approach to two big areas? One, school accountability, and two, student assessment.
Obviously, the uncertainty is the biggest word for us, just the not knowing, you know, what we can rely on and what we can't rely on, or what we're going to be measured with or not measured with. That impacts us not only in the classroom, but on our funding as well. Like, one of the big things I can think about is the federal funding for special education. That will definitely impact us, and we don't know how much funding we'll get and if we will be underfunded for that, which we have been underfunded for years. And so that could then impact our accountability and assessment by knowing what we have, what dollars we have to use, and what we'll be measured on.
And you mentioned funding for special education. It's fair to assume, at least in my experience, and I know in yours, how much money you get for a particular area like special education is independent of all the laws on the books that you're required to follow in terms of special ed instruction. And when I think about how they're interrelated, if you're expected to follow X, Y, and Z in the law, but you don't have the money to support that, it really puts you in a difficult position as a superintendent to identify where are you going to spend the money that you do get. Is that a fair assessment of what you're dealing with now?
Absolutely. And, you know, some students come with higher needs, which requires more funding to support the whole child, and how, you know, we can get those students to learn and to grow. And so not knowing what funding we'll have to support those students and then how we will be assessed on that growth, that's a major concern.
So many School Talks listeners may have heard the word Title I. It's a federal grant that provides a lot of financial support to school districts across a range of areas. And I'm curious, from your perspective in your district, what impact has all of this uncertainty had in terms of your current state of Title I funding and what you may or may not expect or anticipate in the future?
You know, the biggest thing, again, is the impact on our budget from, you know, how they categorize those things. I think ultimately they've changed, like, the Medicaid eligibility policy at the federal level, which then has led to a decline in the number of students across our state that are classified as at risk or economically disadvantaged, even if their family income hasn't necessarily risen, they have fallen off as being considered eligible for those that funding. And since the state funding formulas often rely on the federal program data to, you know, label a student as at risk and those funds that travel along with that student, districts with higher concentrations of poverty are at risk of receiving less money for supplemental services that we need to work with families and students and make sure that we're supporting the whole mm-hmm. child. Rural and smaller districts are especially vulnerable because those federal grants often make up the difference to give them staffing and money for transportation and other special programs.
Mm-hmm. We're currently chatting with Stacy Denowith-Fitchie, the superintendent of Warren Woods Public Schools, about the changes at the federal level in the Department of Education. Superintendent, let me ask you, how has this federal oversight and all the activity happening at this federal level affected your ability to recruit teachers into the profession and maybe more importantly, help keep those who are already here?
I think we have to go back to the word uncertainty. You know, we just don't know what we're going to be given on any given day. So, you know, when you're trying to recruit and retain top talent for these positions, that uncertainty creates, you know, they might want to go into a different position. Here in Michigan, we have different, we have changed the structure for how, like, when you and I were hired in regard to benefits that you were given or things like that. And so that does create uncertainty for students. In addition, you know, our teachers definitely have a bachelor's degree. Many or most have a master's degree or even higher than that. And, you know, if you think about a business that is, you know, recruiting someone with a master's plus 30 additional credits, the way that those people are paid in the business world for those degrees is much different than we can sometimes mm-hmm. afford to pay them at the school level.
Ironically, Michigan was already chasing after teacher recruitment as an outgrowth of the pandemic. As I know you're aware and many of our listeners are, Michigan has a Grow Your Own program trying to attract people to the profession. And I think as that began, it was in pure desperation of the shortages school districts were facing. And then to have this uncertainty compounded at the federal level, I imagine it's a pretty tricky place to work nowadays in terms of anticipating how you're going to fill all these positions.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are requirements and, we want the best in front of our students, but often that is difficult. But I do think that our strength lies in those programs that we have at the local level that are innovating, like you mentioned, the Grow Your Own initiative, which allows us to use state funding to help, you know, existing school staff earn teaching certificates, especially in high-demand areas like special ed or English language learners. This is definitely, you know, we have a robust program at our Macomb ISD. In fact, I think you'll be interviewing soon the first graduate of our Macomb Grow Your Own program who has become a teacher and will be working in Warren Conn.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. We're going to be interviewing her on the same program today. So it's a good connection. One last question. I want to connect a couple of dots here. With the federal changes, there's been some movement in career and technical education priorities, as well as mental health. And I'm curious, have you felt as a superintendent any coordination or lack thereof of trying to focus on those kinds of areas given this current uncertainty?
Yes, I think Michigan's CTE programs are adapting well to the federal changes just by focusing on developing more work-based learning opportunities and implementing those post-secondary credentials for students to meet the workforce demands, as you know, here, especially in the Detroit area. You know, we have a wide variety of needs coming up in the workforce, you know, outside of, you know, students going to college. So the rapidly changing federal guidelines make it difficult to prepare for some of those multi-year programs where students need to go. So we're focusing on aligning our CTE offerings with local industries, seeking to protect that federal funding from further cuts or delays. This is essential for our students to learn some of these technical education pathways, you know, working with businesses in our area to support those apprenticeships. And the uncertainty of if the federal funding will be there definitely affects the long-term investments that some local companies are willing to make in order to attract these new workers.
Well stated. And the key word you said was essential. When you think about all of the cranes up in the air downtown and the number of projects happening all over, essential workers is probably the best description you could come up with. So Superintendent of Warren Woods Public Schools, Stacy Denowith Feechee, thanks for checking in with us. Keep up the great work. I know it's a difficult time to be a superintendent, and we appreciate your time on School Talks.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy.
Coming up after the break, we'll chat with the first graduate of Michigan's Grow Your Own program, a teacher right here in Macomb County. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Mackenzie Calloway, a 7th and 8th grade English teacher at Carleton Middle School in Sterling Heights. Joining her is her principal, Mr. Eric Kausch, who is also at Carleton, running the entire school community, I might add. And welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So, what's really exciting about today is we have with us Mackenzie, who has been identified as the first graduate of Michigan's Grow Your Own program for Macomb County. And for our School Talks listeners, a few years ago, the state developed a program to incentivize people to go into the teaching profession. And the Grow Your Own program provided assistance and support to people who may or may not be working in education. And Mackenzie is the first graduate of that program working in Macomb County. And I've gotten a lot of nice press given your achievement. And I'm excited to have you here because it's not often you see the end result of something started by the state that is so tangible. And just for full disclosure for our School Talks listeners, I was also Mackenzie's college professor about a year ago at Wayne State University, and I'd like to think she's well prepared for the profession. So let's start with this. Mackenzie, what inspired you to try and go into the Grow Your Own program?
Well, initially, what inspired me to go into teaching in general was that when I was very young, I always, always, always had a passion for English and literature. I remember one of my earliest memories in third grade, there was an essay writing competition where our principal had given us a topic. We had to write an essay about it. I remember I worked so hard to win this competition. It was me, my academic rival at the time. We cared about our grades even at the young age in third grade. So I remember I even pulled out a real thesaurus. I was trying really hard and revising that essay. And I remember getting picked to read that essay in front of the school. And that sense of pride and achievement when it comes to literature really just carried me throughout my entire life.
Mm-hmm. And what grade was that?
That was third grade.
Third grade.
Yes.
So it's fair to say teaching is probably in your DNA.
Yes.
And when I think about how the Grow Your Own program supports someone like you to get to a teaching position, how do you think going through the program, in addition to your long-standing desire, how do you think that helped shape your path to where you are now?
Well, so I initially heard about the Grow Your Own program through my brother, who was a part of the Magnet program, the Summer Teacher Academy. And through that program, I actually met Sarah Polarski, who is the advisor, and she was my mentor in that program as well. So after a brief interview, I actually joined the program. And part of the program's requirements are that you are something called an instructional ambassador for the MISD. So as an instructional ambassador, you can create your own opportunities to work in the world of education. One of the opportunities that I created was I was able to present a proposal to the administrators of a particular middle school in which I created a plan to help them create a tutoring center in their media center. So then I actually staffed that tutoring center and ran it for a period of time. And experiences like that, I feel like, are absolutely invaluable for someone like me who is still in college, getting that experience in the professional world, and then feeling like that transition into teaching was way smoother because of it.
You know, you mentioned the MISD, and for our listeners, MISD is the Macomb Intermediate School District, which is the county hub for all the school districts in Macomb County, and they are a driving force in this Grow Your Own program. And, you know, I think it's worth mentioning, during the pandemic and all the stuff that's been happening in schools, it's no secret that we might have a shortage of teachers. It's a difficult job, and the number of challenges facing people who enter the profession is pretty significant. So to have a program like this that really and truly helps grow your own is a perfect example of why you're sitting here today. So let me ask, when you were hired by Warren Consolidated Schools, can you share with us a little bit of what the interview process was like as you were hired? Let me say it this way. Mark, let me stop this question. I want to ask you this question. I'm sorry. My mistake. So
I can talk about how I felt the program prepared me for it.
Yeah.
And so, then he can talk about...
Yeah, let me start there. We'll just take this from the top. So, so as a follow-up, Mackenzie, how do you think the Grow Your Own program prepared you to actually make the transition into teaching?
The Grow Your Own program really helped me make the transition into teaching in many different ways, but I think the major two ways that it helped me was, one, it helped me understand how to communicate in a professional setting with other professionals in the world of education. So like I mentioned before, having experiences where I get to speak with other administrators in not just a capacity as a learner, but also as a leader myself, and to be able to contribute to the conversations, I think really helped me. In addition to that, I know we had an event at the MISD for all the Grow Your Own participants, where it was a big workshop in which we got to participate in mock interviews and prepare to go into the teaching force and actually be in those interviews.
You mentioned the professional setting. There's probably no more important professional setting than getting an interview.
Absolutely.
And a question for you, Principal Eric Kausch. The interview process in Warren Consolidated Schools in order to hire someone like Mackenzie must involve several steps. Can you tell us a bit about not only the process in general, but what something or some ways that Mackenzie had to go through in the process?
Sure. So once we know we have a vacancy, in this case, the 7th and 8th grade language arts vacancy was posted around mid-summertime. We're going through resumes. We're waiting for that closure of time to happen when it's posted for maybe 10 or 14 days. And then really, myself, I'm looking through resumes and looking for folks that have good experience working with students. I often look for someone that wants to be at the middle school. You know, oftentimes, student teachers or folks with experience are coming to us from an elementary or high school setting, and in this case, Mackenzie certainly had the middle school experience. So I'm narrowing down. In this case, I think Mackenzie was one of about 35 to 40 applicants. We narrowed it down to about 12 that looked really, really good on paper, and then brought those 12 candidates in for an interview. We assembled a team of about 8 to 10 teachers. We had our assistant principal there. And before we get started, we sit down with our team and we really try to identify what characteristics we're looking for in that candidate. So in this particular case, we wanted someone that, again, wanted to be at the middle school experience, was willing to step in and do other initiatives besides just teaching. So Mackenzie's actually our yearbook coordinator, which came out in the interview as well. She's also a web leader and link leader from her own high school and middle school experience. So we're doing that program at Carleton, and we identified other characteristics such as a team player, willing to collaborate. And at the end of the day, after we interviewed those 12 candidates, Mackenzie really checked many, if not all, of our boxes of what we were looking for that candidate. So we go through that process. We make the recommendation to hire. I called two of her references, and her references were, gosh, some of the best reference checks I've ever done. And actually, I called Sarah Polarski as well and got to cross paths with her most recently. So that reference check process happens. It goes to HR. They make her the offer. And then finally, we get to sit down and work together this school year. It's been really a good joy.
And get to work. So we're currently chatting with Mackenzie Calloway and Eric Kausch from Carleton Middle School, as Mackenzie is the very first graduate of Michigan's Grow Your Own program. So Mackenzie, as a product of our local schools, how do you think being local has influenced you as an ambassador, as you mentioned, for the program?
I think first and foremost, it's given me confidence that I know that I have a voice in this setting and that I can be a leader in this setting, but also I can learn from it as well. And honestly, being a part of the community, also growing up in Macomb Public School as well, Fraser High School is where I graduated from, being a part of the community in general just makes me feel like I'm making a difference in the world, helps me connect to it in a better way.
I need to take a short break. When I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the training that you've gone through in that and building your capacity as an educator. So if you'll stay right there, this is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. We're currently chatting with Mackenzie Calloway, Michigan's first graduate of the Grow Your Own program in an attempt to build the teaching workforce. Along with her is Eric Kausch, the principal at Carleton Middle School. Principal Kausch, let me ask you, now that you have the benefit of Mackenzie on staff doing a great job, how do you see the Grow Your Own program impacting teacher shortages and, more importantly, educational quality in Michigan, especially, I would think, in some areas that might be underserved?
Yeah, so if you rewind the tape to about 15 years ago, I remember when I first was getting into administration, there was an opening at the school I was at, and we had between probably 300 and 325 applicants for a dual certified teacher, a math and language arts, which is kind of an anomaly now. And I remember searching and going over all those resumes. When I was graduating from Michigan State back in 2003, many of my colleagues and peers were leaving the state of Michigan to go elsewhere to teach. They were going to Arizona, they were going to other states just to get that teaching job because Michigan seemed to have an overabundance of teacher applicants. Nowadays, if you have a science or a Spanish opening, some of those special education classes that need staffing, it's very, very difficult to find good quality teachers to hire. And like I said earlier, Mackenzie's case, we did have about 35 applicants for this job, but it seems like ELA is one of those professions or one of those certification areas that people are still passionate about and going into. But in this case, it was so clear and evident with Mackenzie's experience and her background that she was very much prepared for the classroom, and all the experiences that she had with the Grow Your Own program, with those 10 hours with student teaching, really set her up for success. I feel like it's also a really nice way for folks. You know, I feel like oftentimes when people are student teaching, that might be one of their first experiences actually working with students. And if you're in that category and you've been in school for 3.5, 4, 4.5 years, and then you go to student teaching, you're like, boy, this isn't for me. This isn't what I thought the job was. Like, this isn't what it was like when I was in, you know, Mackenzie shared a story earlier about when in third grade, a lot has changed in education since Mackenzie was in third grade or since I was in third grade. So if that's your first experience as student teaching, you can be shell-shocked. Mm-hmm. And with Mackenzie going through this program, she had many, many experiences that maybe reaffirmed her thinking and that life choice to be a teacher. And we need so many great quality teachers right now. Let me share one more thing. You know, a lot of districts and Warren Consolidated Schools is certainly one of them, are actually starting teacher cadet programs. So we have a career prep center in Warren Consolidated Schools, and there's a teacher cadet program that's preparing high school students to become teachers, similarly that you would as a dental hygienist, or maybe you want to be a nurse or some sort of industry person with welding or auto repair. We're actually doing that right now for teacher cadets to try and combat some of those teacher shortages.
You know, the teacher cadet program was booming back in the day when schools were expanding differently. Then it went away for a while, and now it's back really for a whole bunch of different reasons. But you make a really good point about specialty areas. And I think it's worth noting, when you mentioned special education, I know school districts right now are struggling to find teachers who are certified in autism or different areas. And one of the great traps that schools are in right now is there is a basket of laws schools have to follow regarding instruction for special ed. And the laws don't care whether or not you have people to fill the position. And it is an extraordinary disconnect between what the law says and whether or not you're able to do it. Much in a very similar way, If you offer transportation to school, you need bus drivers. Mm-hmm. If you don't have bus drivers, you can't get them to school. And it's an interesting sort of catch-22 when you have so many things on the books that are required, but not the people to fill them, which really reinforces why the Grow Your Own program is such a unique and powerful opportunity. Mackenzie, let me ask you, what unique perspectives or connections have you brought to the classroom from some of the trainings that you've gone through?
Well, I think something that Mr. Kausch brought up that was a really great point is that I came into student teaching and teaching with already having some experience because of the program that I was in. And I think that's a unique experience that not only sets me apart from other candidates, but also personally helps prepare me for the teaching job. And, you know, one of the things that my mentor and advisor of the program, Sarah Polarski, had taught me was treat every opportunity like it's a job interview, learn as much as you can from it, and be as professional as you can. And with that advice in mind, I really took a hold of all the opportunities and I learned from them in great, extraordinary ways. Mm-hmm. One of the opportunities that I was given was actually a chance to go to the Ron Clark Academy, which I'm not sure if you've heard of the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So the Ron Clark Academy is a school that has some really innovative and teaching strategies and is nationally recognized, and data-driven success is happening there. And it's also a bit of a teaching school. So what will happen was they'll have real-life students teaching or interacting with teachers who are teaching them, and other teachers can come visit as professional development. And as a Grow Your Own student and the first to graduate, I was sent there. You know, my flight, everything was paid for. And I got to then just experience that setting. And I learned so much from that experience and from Ron Clark himself that I actually took back a lot of strategies to Carleton Middle School that I do with my students. And, you know, one of the things that he always talks about is engagement with your students. And, you know, they sit down, especially in English class, and we have them especially for 2 hours, they sit and read and don't get to really interact and do things. So part of what I learned from the Ron Clark Academy was to bring that movement, bring that engagement, and really energize them in the classroom and, you know, motivate them to have those classroom discussions.
What a wonderful experience for a teacher not only interested in the profession, but to your point, Ms. Polarski's advice about treating every opportunity as a job interview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My dad's version of that was dress for the job you want next.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was good advice to always be professional and forward thinking and to take your attitude and your interest in children and teaching and combine that with this kind of training is really neat to see.
Absolutely.
So one last question, looking ahead, what are some goals you have as an educator? And more importantly, what are your hopes for the future of the Grow Your Own program?
My hope for the future of the Grow Your Own program is that they continue to get more membership, that they continue to receive that funding so that they can put more students through this. And one of the biggest weights that have been lifted off my shoulders due to this program was the fact that they had paid for my college education. And in turn, I get to work in Macomb County and benefit the program and the community in that way. So it's a win-win situation, really. And I think that I more students need to be able to experience this, and also more educators would benefit from more students going through this program.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that it continues.
And Eric?
I was going to say, you know, if hiring candidates like Mackenzie is going to be the norm with the Grow Your Own program, it certainly makes our job at the billing level much, much, much easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of instructional pedagogy and classroom management and all the things that Mackenzie came to us prepared to do as a first-year teacher, I will certainly look for those Grow Your Own candidates during that job search of the next opening, the next vacancy that we have.
So it was great chatting with you, Mackenzie and Eric. I appreciate your time and a wonderful testament to you and your commitment to education. I really appreciate you joining us on School Talks, and it goes without saying, keep up the good work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll hear from the Reverend Jim Holley and his continued work in the city of Detroit. Stay right there. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks is Reverend Dr. Jim Holley. Welcome to the program, Reverend.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. Our School Talks listeners may well be aware that Reverend Holley served 50 years as senior pastor of Detroit's historic Little Rock Baptist Church. He retired in 2021 and now as pastor emeritus continues his work. A lifelong advocate for civil rights, education, and economic empowerment, he continues to actively serve the community through his ministries in so many other ways, both locally and internationally. And Reverend, I think a great place to start would be, since retiring in 2021, what new roles or projects have you taken on to continue your service?
That's a good question. You know, for the most part, I think I really didn't want to retire. I just felt like at some point or another, after 50 years, you don't want to spend all your life filling the church and the rest of your life entering the church. So I just felt like God wanted me, wasn't through with me. I wanted to wear out, not to rust out. And so basically I went into evangelism. And so I'm doing international, 200 countries around the world once a week, and also three counties on the cable here in Detroit.
I'm intrigued by the international connection. Mm-hmm. Could you walk our listeners through how your work with another country sort of operates? What are the mechanics behind having a ministry in another country?
Let me just say this. You're in 200 countries. You don't know what the effect is. You just got to believe and have faith that you're making a difference. But I do know this, that a couple of years ago, I was able to service a lady that needed heart surgery. They came to Detroit, and I was able to basically through the help of Henry Ford Hospital to get that surgery for her. And it's because of the fact of the ministry from here to Liberia. In December, I'll be speaking to about 5 million people at one time in Nigeria. It's one of the largest churches in Nigeria. And these are the things that you really be exposed and also to connect people to God.
What motivates you to remain active in social justice and economic development, maybe a little bit away from the religious sector? Mm-hmm. Where does that come from within you?
I think more than anything else, I grew up in the South, and I'm 81 years old. And so when you look back over your life and you see basically you went to Jim Crow, you went through segregation, all of those things. And so you basically feel like somehow, some kind of way, you just got to do what you mm-hmm. have to do. Wherever I'm needed, that's where I try to be. But more than anything, I think right now, Robert, I kind of choose my battles.
Given Detroit's current challenges away from what you often see on television with regard to the development mm-hmm. and all the wonderful stuff happening, what role do you see faith-based leadership like you've provided helping address Detroit's current challenges?
I think more than anything else, the thing that you really measure the work that you're doing is basically how connecting other people with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. This world is so small now, you know, and the challenges are even larger. But I think when we all basically have the same faith and have the same emphasis in terms of trying to change the world and change people to change the world, I think more than anything else, that's what drives us mm-hmm. all together.
We're currently chatting with Senior Pastor Emeritus of Detroit's historic Little Rock Baptist Church, the Reverend Dr. Jim Holley. So, one thing you and I have in common is I retired last year after a career as a school superintendent. And the one thing I learned is you don't ever really appreciate what's on your shoulders until it's off. And in your case, what would you point to a memorable moment or a success that you've had since you've retired mm-hmm. In the work you're doing now?
I think the one I just mentioned to you in terms of the lady that's coming for heart mm-hmm. surgery, and if she didn't have it, the doctor indicated that she would not have about 3 months to live. So, and I was instrumental in making something happen with her, and how that really came about with Henry Ford Hospital. You know, I had a stroke in 2008, and I was paralyzed. I basically, people gave up on me. In fact, they said I had about 10% to live. And yet I felt God told me that he could work with 10%. So I just feel like at some point or another, your testimony, you come to realize that you can share it with other people and really encourage other people that it's nothing too impossible for God. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying to you again is that these are the things that you come feel like even after your ministry that it's not over yet. You just feel like somehow, some kind of way that you need it. And I really have a wonderful reputation that God has given me. And so I feel like somehow, some kind of way that I will be here until God says it's over. Mm-hmm. And it ain't over until He says it's over.
How would you want people to remember your sort of collective body of work?
Yeah. I thank you so much for that, Robert. I think the point is that if I made a difference, you know, that I made a difference. The worst thing in the world is to live and nobody know that you were here. You just want to make a difference. And end of life, that you really look back and you come to realize that you did make a difference. And I think that's what drives me and that I really look forward to assessing.
With regard to a school connection, mm-hmm. I understand that you're developing a literacy program for students. Could you tell our School Talks listeners what your vision is for that and how it might help students?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do, God sends a lot of people to me, and then I try to connect the blocks, so to speak, the relationships. And so some of the Pistons that used to be Piston players came to me and wanted to do some things. So we're talking about volleyball, we're talking about pickleball, and also basketball. And we're going to use those sports. One of the Pistons is ambassador to China on pickleball. And so we're trying to make sure something like that happens. And then we want to make sure that we do some tutoring. One of the things I'm really worried about is our children can't read. They can't even sign their signature because of cursive writing and also math. So I'm just saying to you, those are the three things I really want to make a difference in the public school system here in the city of Detroit. So twice a week, these are the things that we're going to do.
I can tell you, I watch my wife play pickleball,
yeah.
And there's a lot of physics in pickleball. In the education world, we refer to that as learning by proxy.
There you go.
You do one thing, but you're learning another. And talk about a game of angles. I'm good in the stands eating the popcorn. So, Reverend Dr. Jim Holly, I want to thank you so much for stopping by School Talks. Your work certainly speaks for itself, and the commitment you've made to the city and now internationally is extraordinary. And I really appreciate your time on School Talks. And kind of goes without saying, but keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. I'm very appreciative for your kindness and the interview as well.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank all of my guests for a great conversation that continues to shed a great light on schools and the people who work in them all across our great state. That's all the time we have for today. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.